boxes of letters. You cannot believe how many boxes of letters we got every week from people in the remote rural areas when the post offices still worked, would post a letter to us, often asking us. We were the first point of information for HIV/AIDS. The government was in denial, as many countries are in denial at the start of the epidemic. So I'm not blaming them for that, but we were the first point. We used to hide our sensitive letters. We used to send them to our lawyers for safekeeping, because I'd had previous experience in South Africa, and I said, you know, if they're serious about us, they'll come for our letters and they'll go for the people who wrote to us. And sure enough, they did. But we had them safe. So that was the beginning of a struggle for the press in Zimbabwe. After the state had now closed, that the independent, the Zimbabwe newspapers was now a government mouthpiece, the electronic media was now a government mouthpiece, the Act of Parliament was ignored, the trust that had been set up to secure a first free press after Rhodesia, because there was no free press in Rhodesia, it had gone. Parade was on its own. Out of Parade, however, and I then left the country and went to South Africa in the beginning of 1991, after the ANC had been unbanned, and my South African husband, who was a journalist, could then return home. And so, as he had come with me to Zimbabwe, I went with him to South Africa for the four bloody years leading up to democratic elections in 1994. In my absence in that period, Andrew Moyes, the editor of Parade, it collapsed, and he went on to form a magazine called Horizon. A daily newspaper had formed, it went broke. There's been this constant efforts by Zimbabweans to establish a regular supply of unbiased, well-resourced information. And if there is a hero of the Zimbabwe media, his name is Andrew Moyes. And he's still in Harare today running the Media Monitoring Project. He literally, there are some guys from VOA Studio 7 who are coming in here, both of them trained by him at the beginning of their careers. He set a benchmark for all journalists to do it as it should be done. And he's now running the Media Monitoring Project, because there isn't anywhere for him to go. Then there was the Daily News came just before the new opposition party emerged in September 1999. Just before that, money was raised, and the Daily News, a crisp daily tabloid newspaper, such a relief from this turgid, boring rubbish in the Herald newspaper. There was this fresh, lovely little jewel, and it went on. I think it became an opposition newspaper, and therefore it didn't have distance to do what journalists have to do, but nevertheless it was just fantastic to have it. And they bombed it. They bombed its press, they bombed the entrance to the Daily News, they bombed that. They bombed the press and just destroyed it. They bombed the journalists. They arrested the journalists. They stuck them in prison. They beat them. They broke their cameras. They, you name it, they did it. And it was a long process, and it is no more. We are now left with The Independent, which publishes on a Friday, and I read it this morning. And there it is. Very good little newspaper. It's a tabloid, and it's incredibly expensive for ordinary Zimbabweans. It sells probably 35,000 copies a week. And it's urban-based. There is no media in the rural areas where 70% of the population live. If they've got batteries for their radio, which most of them haven't these days, or a solar panel, which one or two have, they can listen to the turgid rubbish coming out of Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation on four channels. They do not know what is going on in their country 20 miles away, let alone what is going on in Parliament or in the struggle for democracy or whatever one wants to call it. They do not know what is going on, because the oral tradition of people in the urban areas going to their kumusha, their home areas, to see their relatives has almost stopped, because people can't afford to do it. They can't afford the bus rides. There's just no information going out there. I was there 3 weeks ago. in an area that Norma Krieger knows very well. We discussed it the other night, where I went up almost to the Mozambique border in Mashonaland East and across. I think I did 700 kilometers. I have to remember how to say it for VOA, kilometers, across down to Ushinga. I saw the green bombers, Mugabe's private army in new uniforms, cheering us along. I had a wonderful cover. I had a wonderful cover, so I was never going to be caught. And I spoke to people who did not know I was a journalist, and I tried to find out what they knew. And they hardly knew anything. They knew their own lives, that they had nothing in their little trading stores. There was no seed for the planting season, which is now. They had no seed. They had no fertilizer. They didn't know why they didn't have it. They didn't know what the value of the money was. They couldn't understand why there was nothing in the shops. Their small world, and this is Mugabe's heartland where I was. Their children are going to school. It's an orderly, polite, incredibly polite, orderly society where, I mean, there are villages there that I shouldn't think a white person has been there other than the missionary for many decades, and I can assure you I was in no danger. I enjoyed their company. I thought they were charming and hospitable. When they were offering me a cup of tea and stuff, of course you don't accept anything from Zimbabweans anymore as a cup of tea, because you know that it's their last cup of tea. So I had my own water with me. I felt incredibly serene and safe there and enjoyed their company and was terribly sorry that they have no idea what has engulfed their lives. And so that newspaper, The Independent, never reaches them. It's too expensive. Could never get out there. They can't get the radio. If they do get the radio, they just hear what the ruling ZANU-PF is doing, and it gives them good news. I read the paper this morning, the Herald newspaper this morning, very good news. Zimbabwe's on the road to recovery. They say that every day. It's on the road to recovery. They never mention that it's got 8,000% inflation, the highest in the world, nor that the Zimbabwe dollar, and I've got one here, I hope I've got one here. This is the latest highest denomination currency. This is $200,000. They chopped 3 noughts off in August 2006, so it's really $200 million. It doesn't buy a loaf of bread. It doesn't buy a loaf of bread also because there isn't any bread. But if it did, if there was bread, it wouldn't buy a loaf of bread. It's worth 20 American cents at best. And this is a country that at independence, the Zimbabwe dollar was worth the equivalent of a US dollar. So the unofficial rate, which is the only rate, the black market is the only money market for the United States dollar, is 1 million. It'll be 1,100,000 probably tomorrow morning. It'll be going up 100,000 a day. It is a chaotic situation. And the tragedy of all of this is that the Zimbabweans, who are 70% of the population, do not know why it is happening, excepting they are told by ZANU-PF that it's caused by America, it's caused by George Bush and Tony Blair. They haven't quite got onto Gordon Brown's name yet. That's what's caused it, and that it's sanctions. The only sanctions there are travel sanctions and the Zimbabwe Democracy Act in America, which means that the American government has a casting vote in the IMF so that Zimbabwe cannot get balance of payment support, but nobody would ever lend Zimbabwe money, even if there wasn't the Zimbabwe Democracy Act, because they can't pay it back. But those are the only sanctions. But that is what the people in the rural areas heard, and that is also what I heard when I was out there 3 weeks ago, that it's George Bush. They know George Bush's name better than they know a lot of other names. George Bush's name, Tony Blair's name, and sanctions. Other than that, there's economic recovery around the corner. And I'm afraid the people of Zimbabwe have no idea what has engulfed the best educated population, not only in Africa, maybe in the third world, a country which had, and Mugabe did brilliantly, with education and healthcare. He did do it. They have no idea why. Their lives are turned into just unbearable misery. And yet they're cheerful and out there. I miss them. As I'm talking now, I've got an inner eye that I'm seeing on the road, Kinyama Panda, of a really engaging conversation I had with the woman on the road there and her son, and the jokes we told each other. So if there are any questions, that's all I can really tell you about Zimbabwe. Yeah.